I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes.
You got that good hair, too. I like girls with that light complexion look. I can't help it. I'm a victim. I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.
Good hair versus being nappy-headed, red bone versus dark skin. If you're a black woman, you might have had your looks broken down into those categories and your feelings hurt. The new book, Other People's Skin, explores how black women look at themselves and other black women around them. Elizabeth Atkins and Teresa Stovall both contributed to Other People's Skin. Teresa also co-edited the book, and both writers are with me now. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi, Farai.
So, Teresa, tell me a little bit about your story, the one that you've contributed, and how that creates a certain picture of the dynamic between lighter and darker.
Well, Farai, like Elizabeth, myself, and you, I'm in the media. And so my character, Carmela Daly, is not a light-skinned African-American woman. She's a brown-skinned sister with, quote-unquote, that hair. Okay, so she's got hair that, you know, her family deems special and that made her special and pretty. She's an advertising executive who got into the business to make a difference. She earned her stripes in, you know, in the mainstream at the big white advertising firms and is working for a small African-American boutique firm and encounters a client who has a cosmetic skincare line for black women called Hot Chocolate, and she's found an Alec Weck-looking model to be the face and the body and the spokesperson for this campaign. And the African-American woman, who's a former supermodel turned cosmetics mogul, rejects this model. I don't like the way she looks. She doesn't have the spirit. And so Carmela, our protagonist, goes into battle with this woman, the boutique firm's anchor client, and really has to examine her own issues, her own attitudes and prejudices, and go through a whole learning and healing process.
And Elizabeth, your story deals with hair as well as skin color. Tell us a little bit about that one.
Well, my character is quite autobiographical because it deals with a college student who's biracial, and she has very fair skin, and she has coarse hair that she wears in braids hidden under a hat. So the story is called Take It Off, because she has an African-American boyfriend who's an activist on campus that's racially plagued with problems, and he's always urging her to use her power as a mixed-race person to have insight into two races, as I have, to make change. But she's afraid of that. She's afraid she doesn't know where she fits in. She's afraid of rejection and criticism on both the white and the black side from students and professors. And ultimately, she finds power in the end by realizing that she does have the power, that she can make a difference, that she can turn her own so-called personal tragedy of an identity crisis into triumph for herself and for others to make a difference.
Go ahead.
Well, it shows that someone can empower themselves through a new consciousness.
Let me ask you first then, Elizabeth, and then Teresa, why fiction? There have been any number of nonfiction books about skin color and its importance in the black community and hair texture and its importance. Why did you go for fiction?
Because we live in an entertainment society, and I like to call it edutainment. We tell these powerful, moving stories in an entertaining way, yet the reader walks away educated by learning about how one woman made a difference, and they can do the same.
Teresa, what about you?
I agree with Elizabeth. What we wanted to do, we'd all been published authors, and what we wanted to do is bring our talents together and tackle the challenge of healing. The premise of the story is, how do we begin to heal from this? And there's a freedom in fiction, Fry. There's a freedom, and I think you also get a different audience from the people who are attracted to maybe the nonfiction, very historic, factual books about this. I think you'd attract a different segment of the reading audience with contemporary fiction that they can relate to in a different kind of way, and maybe, you know, we learn from other people's stories, especially as African people. You know, we learn through story. And through other people's stories and parables and things like that.
I have to go to the light skin Libra controversy. Were you surprised that there is not just people are not just what we call color struck, but willing to admit it and even use it as a promotions tool at a club?
Mm-hmm. Well, that happened here in Detroit, Farai, and the clip that you began this piece with is so indicative of the Willie Lynch syndrome that is perpetuated hundreds of years after 1712, when he consulted with slave owners on how to divide and conquer black people, and having a party that promotes the same mentality of favoring one shade of skin over another simply shows that we're still brainwashed and that we're still buying into the Willie Lynch syndrome.
In some ways, though, Teresa, despite all of these conflicts, African Americans have largely held on to a group identity. And in Brazil, for example, where people were sliced and diced into many different categories, there's now a somewhat belated civil rights movement that comes out of people of different hues saying, well, we aren't actually all these different categories. We are people of African descent. Is there any upside that still lies underneath this pain?
Yes, I think so. I think, first of all, as we know, this dynamic touches almost every African-American family. You know, we come in such a spectrum of shades and textures and features. And I think the upside of it is, even in our pain and even in this kind of self-inflicted disease, you know, that we've carried on, we've made it self-inflicted, we've kept it going, self-perpetuated, rather, that there lies hope for healing and even in a kind of strange way, which you mentioned, a unity. Even in this, it touches, it infects and affects every single one of us directly or indirectly. At some point in our lives, it becomes common ground. And as you mentioned in the intro, we've all been hurt by it. Even some of us, you know, I'm very light-skinned and talk very openly about the privileges and the status, but that's faux privilege and faux status. And ultimately, you know, it's more hurtful than it is helpful. So I think it's part of our shared history. It's part of our schizophrenia of being black in America. And it is part of what binds us together. And I think what gives us the potential to heal and really begin the process of self-empowerment.
Elizabeth, you mentioned that your story is semi-autobiographical. Do you think that things are getting better over time? That is, if there was a teenage girl who was coming up with some of the same features and some of the same issues, would she find an easier path to self-acceptance today?
Absolutely. When I talk to college students and young people these days, they have a much more we are the world sort of perspective, that they want to celebrate and embrace all parts of themselves as opposed to being pigeonholed into one or ascribing to the one drop rule. Whereas when I was 19, that was more than 20 years ago, I didn't know anybody who was mixed race like myself until I got to college. And by then, I was already in the midst of this racial chaos of figuring out who am I and where do I fit in. So I ultimately discovered, like my character in the book Other People's Skin, I discovered that I have the power. And that's why I became a journalist and a writer, to put these issues out there, to help other people through talking. It's extremely therapeutic for us to explore ourselves and our place in society.
Well, Elizabeth and Teresa, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Teresa Stovall and Elizabeth Atkins co-wrote Other People's Skin, 4 novellas. Teresa also co-edited the book, and she joined me from our NPR studios in New York. And Elizabeth spoke with me from member station WDET in Detroit.